Frank Muir goes into science and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
That's enough. Settle down. Now, can any boy tell me what nitrates are?
I'm not sure, sir, but I bet they're cheaper than day rates. The mother was expecting her second baby and was too embarrassed to explain her condition to her six-year-old son, Billy. So, thinking maybe they dealt with that sort of thing in science, she asked his teacher to explain. Unfortunately, the teacher was a spinster of the old school who took the boy out aside after class and said, "Now, Billy, very soon the stork is going to come to your house. He'll land on the roof and drop a very special bundle down the chimney." The boy said, "Oh, dear, I hope the noise don't upset Mummy. She's in the club again, you know." Do you know they actually laughed at Marconi when he invented the telephone?
But Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone.
Well, no wonder they laughed at Marconi. A chap in the East End was talking to his friend, and he was trying to explain Einstein's theory of relativity. He said, "Look, let me give you an example. Suppose you sit on a red-hot stove for 1 minute. It feels like 2 hours. But if you're hugging and kissing a beautiful girl for 2 hours, it feels like 1 minute." His friend said, "Oh, and from this he makes a living?" Chemist, do you have some sort of chemical you can put down to get rid of rats?
No, I'm sorry, sir, we're out of stock. Have you tried boots?
I want to poison, not kick him to death, you know. Talking of Alexander Graham Bell, and we were, one night he was in his laboratory, and he shouted for his wife, "Mrs. Bell!" He didn't know her very well. He said, "Mrs. Bell, come in here. I'm on the verge of my greatest invention." She said, "What is it, Alexander?" He said, "Please, honey, if you've ever prayed, I want you to pray as you've never prayed before." And as she looked in the laboratory, there on the table was a huge glass dome with what looked like a bit of wire inside. And there were wires leading off onto batteries, stack of batteries. And Alexander Graham Bell took hold of one end of the lead that led up to this filament and clipped it onto one end of the battery. And he said, "Okay, honey, this is the moment. Pray, honey, this is probably my world, the greatest invention I have ever made." And he clipped the other clip to the other end of the battery. There was a spluttering inside this globe. And suddenly a little light glowed red, spluttered and grew white. And the whole room was filled with this light from this globe. And he said, "I've done it, honey, I've done it." He picked up and said, "Hello?"
Science is very confusing, especially for the layman. In fact, a lot of us could echo Charles Lamb's words.
"In everything that relates to science, I'm a whole encyclopedia behind the rest of the world."
And their language doesn't help either. It's full of new and confusing words. One sometimes suspects that scientists deliberately coin them to mystify their non-specialist listeners. G.K. Chesterton.
"Science in the modern world has many uses. Its chief use, however, is to provide long words to cover the errors of the rich. The word kleptomania is a vulgar example of what I mean."
The study of science can be a pure study, totally unrelated to the business of real life. George Bernard Shaw questioned whether it was ever useful.
"Science is always wrong. It never solves a problem without creating 10 more.
But it's always better to know something about a subject before you condemn it. Just get to know the hardware of science and you're on the way to startling discoveries. Here's an extract from an unnamed novel.
"What was the meaning of all the apparatus? Racks of test tubes, most of them half full. The microscopes on stands, the Bunsen burners, the white painted box on which was the word incubator. What were these things? In a flash of intuition, Crichton realized the truth. He was in a laboratory."
After only a very short study of science, you too could be capable of such amazing perceptions. And then you'd be ready to move on to more difficult aspects of the subject, like learning the names of all the elements. Fortunately, a mnemonic has been worked out to help you remember them all. Here it is, and do feel at liberty to join in as it goes along.
Mm-hmm. There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium, and strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium. There's holmium, and helium, and hafnium, and erbium, and phosphorus, and francium, and fluorine, and terbium, and manganese, and mercury, molybdenum, magnesium, dysprosium, and scandium, and cerium, and cesium, and lead, praseodymium, and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium, and tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium, and cadmium, and calcium, and chromium, and curium. There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium, and also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, kryptonium, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium. These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.
Tom Lower, grasping the basics of science may take a little time. One cannot always guarantee to get it all right straight away. Ever since science has been taught in schools, there's been a tendency for pupils to make mistakes. Let's hear a few classic schoolboy howlers on the subject. We'll start with something simple. Gravity.
Gravity was discovered by Sir Isaac Walton. It is chiefly noticeable in the autumn when the apples are falling off the trees.
We move to vacuums.
A vacuum is an empty space where the Pope lives.
And how do you create a vacuum?
To remove air from a flask, fill the flask with water, tip the water out and put the cork in quick.
It's true, isn't it, if you're quick enough? While we're on water, let's have a scientific definition of it.
Water is composed of two gins, oxygen and hydrogen. Oxygen is pure gin, hydrogen is gin and water.
And finally, to physics. Let's have a problem based on the principle of levers and moments. What is the mechanical advantage of a long pump handle?
The mechanical advantage of a long pump handle is that you can have someone to help you pump.
Of course, you don't just learn science in the classroom. You can also follow new developments by watching all those earnest television science programs.
The latest communication satellite, ComSat Mark III, which is short for Communication Satellite Mark IV, was launched only yesterday. By means of this relay, my voice will now be bounced from our transmitter to Goonhilly Down, then up to ComSat 3, down again to 37 Edith Road, Purley, from there to 38 Edith Road, Purley, via the radio mast in Tokyo, and from there to our expert, Dr. Brooke Ferret, sitting opposite me in the studio. Can you hear me? Dr. Brooke Ferret.
No, I can't hear you.
Oh, well, I can't hear you either.
You'll have to speak up a little.
I said I can't hear you either.
And neither can I.
Well, we seem to be having a little trouble, so I'll just say goodbye, Dr. Brooke Ferret.
Hello.
Professor Otto Klees has recently published a paper on the language of the three-toed sloth. Professor, do you mean to say that you understand this language?
Oh, yes, I do. Bim, zom, pim, boodle, dum, boodle, dum, boodle, dum.
And that was the language of the three-toed sloth?
No. No, I don't know what came over me. I do apologize.
Well, could you give us an example of their language? I mean, how would a three-toed sloth say good evening?
It would say good evening.
But have you ever heard a three-toed sloth say good evening?
No, they're dumb, you see. They're also very, very rude, so they probably wouldn't bother to say good evening anyway, even if they could. They'd probably just walk straight in and eat your slippers.
So they can't speak at all?
No, not a word. And they lisp.
This business of communication must be quite a problem. If I may make a simple analogy, when you throw a stone in a bucket of water, the ripples spread outward.
Exactly. And if you throw a stone into a bucket of three-toed sloths, you wouldn't get any ripples at all. They just lie there shouting, please stop it.
I thought you said they were dumb.
Yes, but they're not that dumb.
And, that ends this edition, and thanks to the satellites, we'll be back yesterday with yet another edition of The Day After Tomorrow's World at the same time last week. Happy New Year.
A piece of I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again with David Hatch, John Cleese and Tim Book Taylor. Much of science is inexplicable unless you know a lot about it, and one of the most inexplicable bits of science is electricity. One does vaguely know the principle, but it's very difficult to understand how the power gets converted into radios and fridges and hair rollers and electric toothbrushes. Perhaps a definition will help, one written by Ambrose Bierce at the turn of the century.
Electricity, the power that causes all natural phenomena not known to be caused by something else.
He also provided useful information about those allied phenomena, magnets and magnetism.
Magnet, something acted upon by magnetism. Magnetism, something acting upon a magnet.
Now, we almost take for granted the wonders of electricity, but we should be grateful to all the scientists, past and present, who have devoted their lives to its study. We benefit from their research. A report from the magazine Electrical Engineering.
Lamps must be long enough to be efficient, and their average length is likely to increase. Prolonged deliberation at one laboratory has produced the following rule on maximum lamp length. No lamp shall be longer than the maximum dimension of the room it is intended to fit.
Thank heavens that there are scientists working away all the time to reach those conclusions. There are also scientists who are concerned about the environment, always ready to allay the fears of conservationists. Here's a report from the Daily Graphic.
Mr. Samuel added that the number of new overhead wires would be comparatively small and placed underground.
Shortly after the report, the Daily Graphic ceased to publish. A working knowledge of electricity is of enormous benefit to the householder, to enable him or her to deal with minor problems that arise without bringing in the experts. The do-it-yourself enthusiast can, of course, get expert advice by writing to magazines such as Practical Television.
I would like your help concerning my receiver, which has developed a fault. I find that when I turn up the contrast control to its proper setting, I get a dirty picture.
Some people, apparently including that lady, are afraid of electricity. Not just afraid of electrocution, but afraid, as most people have always been, of new technology, of the machines taking over.
I worked in the army. Well, I didn't work in the army, but I was in the army. Who worked in the army? Listen. I'm not letting any cats out of the bag, you know. And I was stationed at the Presidio in 1954, and I happened to go back a couple weeks ago, and I would duck my head into officers, you know, and I'd go like, hi, Jim, hi, Harry. And instead of Jim or Harry, there would be a giant machine there with lights on it, lights going up and down and cars dropping into slots, you know. And I had the weird feeling that the machine was about to say, hello, Bob. The really weird thing is going to be when they finally design the ultimate machine in automation, which is required to fire another machine, you know? And the one machine is ushered into the other machine's office, and the boss machine says, sit down, machine. Your work has not been going too well, and we're going to have to let you go. This is a recorded message.
Bob Newhart. Computers are certainly here to stay. Everyone is learning about them these days. Here's a report from the bookseller.
It was a week of surprises for Lady Bird Books. First of all, the Ministry of Defense asked them for a set of books on how computers work. Since, however, the Lady Bird books on this subject are designed for 9 to 15-year-olds, the Ministry, with a proper military regard for camouflage, asked that their senior officers should be enabled to read these concise introductions behind plain brown covers.
Yes, computer knowledge is now available to everyone. Here's a piece from the Sunday Citizen.
The computer class for nudists, 50 strong, consists of housewives, teachers, doctors, engineers, and office workers. Dr. D.J. Gibson Club's secretary explained that it is being started partly because the weather is not always suitable for badminton.
Computers are bewildering machines, though, and to the ignorant, their powers do seem unnatural. Arthur C. Clarke.
Any smoothly functioning technology will have the appearance of magic.
Certainly a lot of the achievements of space research seem almost magical. For some people, putting man into space represents the summit of scientific achievement.
Isn't that wonderful, Mama? That White and McDivitt went around the world 62 times.
A big deal. If you got money, you can travel.
Jack Guildford and Betty Walker. The great achievements of modern science and technology would not have been possible without the patient research and groundwork of some gifted pioneers. One name it is impossible to ignore in any direct discussion of science, and that is Sir Isaac Newton. Here was a clever hue about him, written by I. Kenvin Evans.
Isaac Newton, it is reckoned, lived in the time of Charles II. Charles's 40 was depravity, but Isaac came out strong for gravity.
Einstein, of course, is famous for his theory of relativity, which can be best explained in the following anonymous limerick.
There was a young lady named Bright who travelled much faster than light. She started one day in the relative way and returned on the previous night.
Einstein's influence has been far-reaching. Here's a report on a hospital from the Daily Telegraph.
Dr. Lawler agreed that patients so lacked stimulation that one morning they were seen watching a television test card. Another morning, he said, he found them watching an open university program on Einstein's theory of relativity. He said, I changed it to a cartoon.
Scientific research, like that of Einstein, can be directed towards good or evil. And many people are alarmed by how much of such energy goes into military research. Nikita Khrushchev.
What the scientists have in their briefcases is terrifying.
The accent was pretty terrifying, too. But one can't withhold all admiration from scientists involved in military research. There are certain aspects of the business which require great heroism. I mean, being a test pilot, for example.
H for Hancock calling control tower. Leveling out at 1,800 miles per hour. Everything going to plan. Fine plane, tell the designer chappy.
Control tower. Control tower to Hancock. We're worried about possible sabotage. The mechanic who was working on your aircraft is missing. Think you should come down. Land immediately. Repeat, land immediately.
Nonsense, she's going beautifully. I don't know a thing about any mechanic. Taking her up to 2,400 miles an hour. Hancock's control tower. Something strange is happening. There's a peculiar knocking sound on the windscreen. Seems to be coming from outside the plane. I'm slowing down to 1,800 miles an hour. We'll slide cockpit open to see what's wrong.
Good evening. It's an awful cold here. You can hardly see. What's that? I say, in half cold out here, you can't come in.
There's no room, get off.
Oh, don't be like that. Move over, I'll sit on your lap.
Get your boot off me joystick, do you mind? Who are you?
Me? I'm the mechanic. I was still working on the tower when you took off. Honestly, frightened the life out of me. I mean, I wasn't expecting it. I was just sitting there singing happily to myself, and then next minute, whoosh, I was up here.
Sit still. I can't control the plane with you jumping about.
Well, I'm only trying to get comfortable. All these knobs and levers here sticking in me. Here, what's this one?
Don't touch it!
Oh, it's the ejector seat. Come back. Where are you?
Sitting on the tail!
Oh, no, stop messing about. No, come back in. There's no use sitting out there sulking. I can't drive the thing.
Well, go into a dive so I can slide down.
All right. I'll try this lever. Hello? You might have told me there was another ejector seat.
All right, well, we're both out here. Now what do we do?
Oh, look, we're going up.
Well, what do you expect when we're both sitting on the tail?
Isn't life funny? In the papers this morning, the Star said it was my lucky day.
If we keep going up at this rate, you'll be able to tell them they're wrong.
Tony Hancock, Kenneth Williams, and Hattie Jakes. Well, scientific research isn't always directed to military ends. Much of it is positively beneficial. The scientific approach to ordinary problems can produce startling results. Here's a clip from a Colorado paper.
Dr. Chester said that color blindness occurs most often in people of high intelligence. Only 1% of women are found to be colorblind.
After years of patient research, a scientist may feel confident enough to make a pronouncement like this one, headlined in the Pacific Rural Press.
Sterility may be inherited.
But it ain't easy. It never pays to be too dogmatic, you know. In the words of Sir James Jeans,
science should leave off making pronouncements. The river of knowledge is too often turned back on itself.
And scientists are continually being criticized for what they do to the environment. But ecologists are not always ready to see both sides of the question.
Hi, I am not a professional actress. I am a real person like yourself. I am not here to sell you a product, but to give you some good consumer advice. Most of us are aware of our diminishing supply of natural resources. But did you know we are also running short on unnatural resources? Until recently, I, like so many of you, thought that surely there was enough plastic in the world to go around. Apparently, this is not true. You hear all this talk about saving trees. Well, trees can be grown. With plastics, you have to start from scratch. To say we are up a creek without a paddle will be truer than ever, since paddles are now made of polyvinyl chloride. Some of you may be saying, is this a real crisis or just something the plastics industry trumped up to raise the price of plastics? Well, I am sorry to be the one to tell you that this is a genuine synthetic crisis. If something isn't done, there could be a panic on plastics. Vinyl leopard skin will become an endangered synthetic. Greedy people will be hoarding things like baggies. Rain bonnets, shower curtains, astroturf, spatulas, plastic toothpicks, parcheesi dice, and leisure suits. Tupperware parties will have to be shut down. If we don't stop squandering and start conserving our unnatural resources, there will be an end to civilization as we know it.
Was Lily Tomlin. During the 50s, everyone was told that this country needed scientists, and lots of school children were diverted from art subjects to sciences with a view to filling the void. And if one glances through the situation's vague columns, one gets the impression that the country still needs scientists, or even if this country doesn't, one of the Gulf states does. Let's hear some ads. First, one from The Observer.
Wanted, edible oil technologist.
From an educational magazine.
Postgraduate chemist required for research project, preferably on drugs.
And from the Hereford Times.
Battery repairer required, must be capable man and willing to take charge.
Even though there still seems to be a demand for scientists, the traditional divide between arts and sciences remains. Do you remember C.P. Snow's famous article in the New Statesman on the two cultures? What he said about the attitude of scientists to the arts probably still holds good.
When scientists are faced with an expression of the traditional culture, it tends to make their feet ache.
Probably the best way to bridge the gap between the two cultures is to mix them up a bit. Have science with arts, with music, for example.
One of the great problems of the world today is undoubtedly this problem of not being able to talk to scientists because we don't understand science. They can't talk to us because they don't understand anything else, poor dears. This problem, I think it was C.P. Snow first raised it, Sir Charles Snow in private life, in his books Science and Government and so on. Mind you, I haven't read it. I'm waiting for the play to come. He says quite rightly, he says, is that it's no good going up to a scientist and saying to him, as you would to anybody else, you know, good morning, how are you, lend me a quid, and so on. I mean, you just glare at you, or make a rude retort, or something. You have to speak to him in language that he'll understand. I mean, you go up to him, you say something like, H2SO4, Professor. Don't synthesize anything I wouldn't synthesize. And the reciprocal of pi to your good wife. Now, this he will understand. Snow says that nobody can consider themselves educated who doesn't know at least the basic language of science. I mean, things like the second law of thermodynamics. This is very important. I was somewhat shocked the other day to discover that my partner not only doesn't know the second law, he doesn't even know the first law of thermodynamics. Going back to first principles, very briefly, thermodynamics, of course, is derived from two Greek words, thermos, meaning hot, if you don't drop it, and dynamics, meaning dynamic work. And thermodynamics is simply the science of heat and work and the relationships between the two, as laid down in the laws of thermodynamics, which may be expressed in the following simple terms. After me, Doctor. The first law of thermodynamics. Heat is work and work is heat.
Heat is work and work is heat.
Very good. The second law of thermodynamics. Heat cannot of itself pass from one body to a hotter body.
Heat cannot of itself pass from one body to a hotter body.
Heat won't pass from a cooler to a hotter.
Heat won't pass from a cooler to a hotter.
You can try it if you like, but you far better not.
You can try it if you like, but you far better not.
Cause the cold in the cooler will get hotter as a ruler.
The cold in the cooler will get hotter as a ruler.
Because the hotter body's heat will pass through the cooler.
Cause the hotter body's heat will pass through
first
the cooler.
Heat is work, and work is heat, and work is heat, and heat is work. Heat will pass by conduction and
heat. Heat will pass by conduction and
heat. Heat will pass by convection.
Heat will pass by convection.
Heat will pass by radiation.
Heat will pass by radiation.
And that's a physical law. Heat is work and work's a curse. And all the heat in the universe is gonna cool down. Because it can't increase. Then there'll be no more work and there'll be perfect peace.
Really?
Yeah, that's entropy, man. All because of the second law of thermodynamics, which lays down that you can't pass heat from the cooler to a hotter. Try it if you like, you far better not.
Cause the cold in the cooler will get hotter as a ruler. Cause the hotter body's heater will pass to the cooler.
Oh, you can't pass heat from the cooler to a hotter.
You try it if you like, but you don't look a fool. Cause the cold in the cooler will get hotter as a ruler. That's a physical law.
Oh, I'm hot.
Hot? That's because you've been working.
Oh, Beatles, nothing.
That's the first and second law of thermodynamics.
Michael Flanders and Donald Swan. We'll close with a quick epitaph.
Here lies a scientist who was doing an experiment and unfortunately died because he wanted to know if nitroglycerine was volatile and discovered that it was.
Next week, we'll be taking a look at the subject of English. Until then, goodbye.
Frank, you're going around the pub for a drop of scotch and H2O, eh?
Frank Muir Goes Into Science was written by Frank Muir and Simon Brett and produced by Jeffrey Perkins.